Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. We have an absolute full studio.
Star-studded cast.
Star-studded studio. We have
my cousin Tino over here. Yes.
Beloved right co-host.
Yes.
Silent Gary is not going to be silent today.
No,
Foss is here, an old friend of ours. Paul Schwartz, who's a big campaigner for protecting public lands.
We got the foreign perspective. Montana.
Yeah.
Montana and Germany.
Yeah, that too.
All right, so... Wow, what a year, 2016. Yeah. Everyone is saying, well, I'm glad that is over, and I hope this year is going to be better.
But how can it be? Who knows? I told you, before we went on the air, I sent a note to Stephen Colbert. There's nothing funny about Donald Trump. There's just nothing funny here. And the more they try to make it funny, the more they're going to normalize it. And we have a Republican Party. I guess I'll go first, huh, Steve? We have a Republican
Party. Go ahead.
We have a Republican Party that... is hell-bent, it seems like. I mean, all the evidence is there. We play CSI here. We'll do TV. The evidence shows that they are trying to destroy the republic as we know it. Once again, before we went on the air, I mentioned the historical perspective of during the Continental Congress, Benjamin Franklin walks out, a lady on the street says, "Well, sir, what kind of government have you given us?" And he said, "A republic if you can keep it." And by that, he meant that this kind of government, which I have these papers spread out here, that headline after headline, Google search after Google search, that the Republican Party is a party of subversives. We have been stupefied how the Republican Party subverts democracy. They elect a governor a Democratic governor in North Carolina. The first thing they do is get a Republican legislature together to strip him of his powers.
I don't remember the writer's name, Mike, but there was a guy who said, "You think that the problem in Congress is radical Republican plans," but he said, "What is really the problem is radical Republican strategies, Republican procedures." Is that part what you're talking about?
Yes. When Silent Gary said, "What are you going to do this?" And we talked about Republican tactics. We're talking about tactics and strategy.
Tactics can undercut the republic. That's your
that's our position. Absolutely. And whatever branch of government, don't forget the federal model of executive and judicial and legislative is repeated state to state. Here in Arizona, before I run out of time for my segment here, we have a Republican legislature that has time and time and time again subverted the will of the voters. We vote for marijuana. Boom, they try to change it. It took us four times to get medical marijuana in. We vote. 70% of Arizonans want to increase education funding. They just voted for it again. They every time they voted for education fund, the Republican legislature found a way to subvert the will of the voters up until the lawsuit, and then the settlement of the lawsuit still screwed the voters.
Minimum wage too, right, Mike? They're trying to undo the minimum wage law that was passed by voters.
Voters voted to raise the minimum wage in Arizona, and the first thing the Republican legislature did was try to subvert once again the will of the voters.
We're in an odd situation, folks, and I think that we'd all agree in that Hillary Clinton, the Democratic candidate, got the majority of the vote. She got 3 million more, a little short of 3 million more votes than Donald Trump. The Democrats in the Senate got more votes than the Republican, and yet we've ended up with a government that, if you look at the figures, doesn't seem very representative. And we're the people who kind of got representative government going in the modern world, right, Gary?
Right. It strikes me that with the president, it's the only office in the land that is not democratically elected. It's not elected by popular vote. In Congress, each of the representatives is elected by popular vote. Senate, same thing. You can argue that redistricting and gerrymandering has you know,
it was on my list.
Led to a lot of that, but the reality is that the office of president, the highest in the land, is the only one not elected democratically.
But what's going to happen when all the levers of power are controlled by the Republicans and there's actually a Democratic majority in the country? Isn't that going to cause a great deal of conflict? Or
I hope so. I hope so. Not if people are out there thinking and getting pissed off. I hope it creates lots of conflict. I mean, I get a blue feed on my Facebook page, and so I see resistance organization after resistance organization. I see commercial ones. I see private ones. I see grassroots ones. All angled at resisting, at protesting Trump. Yes, what you said. You have a Democratic majority and a Republicans in power.
There's
it's
an
crazy.
Interesting article in, I think it was the New York Times or Washington Post, and the point was that the Republicans have a whole slew of really conservative legislation, get rid of Obamacare, get rid of
that
the controls
wants.
On...
That nobody wants.
Right. And
that maybe 20%,
30% didn't really run on. I mean, they have their own agenda, and they think that they can put in their domestic agenda pretty much whatever he says or thinks, because he doesn't think so much sometimes.
He didn't run on any policies. His only real policy statement throughout the campaign was hate and anti-immigration.
Right.
You know, he never clarified any policies whatsoever.
He's been sort of consistent. I was going to talk about foreign policy. He's been sort of consistent in over the years in having good feelings about strongmen in various countries. And we now have a
good feelings about strongmen. That's a really nice way to say he's in love with Putin.
Yeah, and maybe Paul, you could come here because you were talking about we're in a period where strongmen. So we've got strongmen in Russia and Philippines, even Syria, of course, and Turkey. Everything seems to be going against democracies, Paul.
Well, you know, I get older, and it's just deja vu all over again for me. We've seen this happening now forever, and it's going to continue happening. The world is turning right, and it'll turn right for a few years.
Governments are turning right. I don't think the world is turning right.
You'd be surprised.
Okay.
You know, maybe a trip to Hungary would clear your mind.
Show me the truth and the light.
And I lived in Britain for a year, and I know what Brits are like. This did not surprise me one bit.
The exit from the European. So you think these larger structures, these post-war structures, are sort of breaking down?
It's not that they're breaking down. They're changing. Things always change. And if you think back, think back 50 years, and you'll see things happening that happened 50 years ago happening again. And it'll always be that way.
The irony is that a lot of this anger in Britain and elsewhere, I have neighbors who are from Britain, is over immigration, and the real and the cutbacks to their social services, and in order to they have austerity programs more than the U.S. after the recession, but the irony is that the people who created the cutbacks, the conservatives, are the ones who have benefited by the unrest caused by those cutbacks.
That's because they're anti-immigrant, which is a emerging pattern in Europe. And Paul mentioned the government in Hungary, which is particularly bad, but the Polish government has now gone very right-wing and populist.
And it's interesting that in Britain, the anti-immigration sentiment is not against Muslims. It's against Poles.
I thought that was really interesting. I read that too, Paul.
That is, you know, I mean, it's like we're in the middle of a big global Polish joke. why don't you look at the bright side of things?
Okay, try.
Okay, how about some bright?
There is one.
If your name were Garcia and you lived in South Phoenix, I think you'd be a lot happier about what happened to Arpaio than sad about what happened with Trump. Let's look at the at the pluses of what's going
on.
Wow.
The name of the show is Democratic Perspective, and Paul Schwartz is trying to cheer us up this morning and give us a perspective that isn't gloom and doom. I want to talk about destroying the legacy of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the two Democratic presidents. When they, are the Republicans out to destroy the legacy of FDR and LBJ? And it certainly seems that way. With the, if you want to consider Voting Rights Act with LBJ, if you want to consider the social safety net of FDR, of Social Security. Grandma. Of course, we're not talking about grandma and grandpa anymore. We're talking about people sitting around this table are going to be eating dog food and maybe some good cat food because we're in Sedona. You can
There's some high quality cat food out there, Mike. I think that. I guess what I'd say is
because the Republicans want to cut it. Let me finish the sentence. They want to go after the social safety net for some reason. And someday somebody's going to explain it to me.
Well, a lot of it begins with LBJ in a way because, you know, as Johnson said, when we do the Voting Rights Act, we're going to lose the South for 50 or 100 years. So many of the people that I worked with and know on the right believe that all the legislation of the Johnson years, all the Great Society legislation benefited Medicare. Black folks and brown folks and not white people. It benefited women and not men. They're deeply concerned about that and resentful of it. They don't see a positive side of it. The Republicans have built on that, Gary, for the last 20 years, tried to build up that resentment and mislead people about what was actually done.
It's the whole idea of white male privilege, you know, that they're angry about their privileges being diminished. And others getting, you know, I call them the I've got mine, you can't have yours crowd.
But they really do believe it. I mean, the guys, they believe that the rise in women's wages was resulted in lowering men's wages. They believe a lot of these things, which I don't think any economist would agree to. But they believe them because the decline, I guess, of one-income families coincides with the rise of all these other things.
It's what's behind what has become the stated as the so-called rural-urban divide. You know that the story goes that the Democrats ignored the rural areas and the white working class, but the reality is that there's very little that the Democrats could have done. Hillary had all sorts of policies that were publicly stated to help the white working class. They ignored all of that and just went with anger.
Yeah, but I was posting on, I think it was the Washington Post website, and I sort of said, yeah, they were neglected except the anger toward intellectuals, the anger toward what they believe is a kind of establishment, pre-exist any actual attitudes that that they had toward intellectuals. When I was growing up in Oklahoma, there's tremendous anti-intellectualism. They would hate the professors. They would love some big loudmouth guy who was busy exploiting them. It's been a problem and a theme in American history for a very long time.
There's so many misunderstandings. There's this belief in the city that in large cities, that people in rural areas are poorly educated and not very bright. And they address, you know, New York and L.A. address the Midwest and most of the country is flyover land. They just don't care about what goes on there. And that feeds this narrative. But on the other hand, there are even worse misunderstandings from the rural areas in that they think their taxes go to help, you know, the cities and not the rural communities. It's exactly the opposite. They think that people in the cities are wealthy elites, and the vast majority of the people living in cities are struggling to get by and are faced with higher costs of living and all sorts of other issues.
When I lived in Manhattan, all these successful people, all these ambitious people, they were from all over the United States. Most of them were from rural areas. And there is a tendency. They got out of Claremore, Oklahoma, where I was one. They made it to New York. They got into it. They made a lot of money. They feel successful that they got it on their own. And they look at the people who stayed back in rural communities because they had these connections with family or they had a career they liked. There is a tendency to think, you know, I got out of here and they didn't, so...
Well, there's so many people in the cities that are working minimum wage jobs. How would you like to be working for even $15 minimum wage in New York City and trying to raise a family or just to scrape by? How would you like to be making minimum wage in San Francisco where real estate is you know, over the top? There's such misunderstandings in rural areas over what goes on in cities. They don't like going to cities. They're afraid of them. They don't understand what happens there. They think it's all high crime and a bunch of rich people trying to scam them.
The best response I got to a post was FarmersOnly.com is dividing America. If you've watched television, you know that there's a dating service that advertises itself as FarmersOnly.com. And it's getting tremendous response, I have to admit, that in your love life, that all you want to find, you know, city people just don't get it. That's their mantra.
Having spent my early years on a farm, nothing irritates me or offends me more than those commercials.
I'm just trying to throw in a little levity here. But I believe it's true.
That we could talk about for the whole show, this divide of rural and conservative. So, you know, everybody has seen the maps with the whole country is red except for all these little blue dots. Well, those blue dots, that tiny number of blue dots, produces 64% of the production of the United States. So there are deep contradictions, Gary. I don't see an easy way through them. Do you?
Well it's just each side needs to kind of step back and try to understand the other. I'd like to point out the anger in the rural communities about immigrants. I come from a community, you know, I went to high school in a community of about 1,200 people. And it's shrinking, you know, every year. The reason it's shrinking is because the family farm has gone from 160 acres in 1960 to more than 1,600 acres now. And so there are far fewer farmers. There's much more mechanization than ever before. That the problem isn't a political problem. The problem is modernization. And that's happening in factories and in the cities as well. And then you have, you know, the people in the rural communities like here are so, I mean, the Southwest is somewhat different, but rural communities in Iowa and Minnesota, Wisconsin, they don't have an immigration problem. They'll probably never, ever see an immigrant.
Let me ask you what Steve Williamson's friends right now are asking at home. When are Democrats going to stop whining? When are we going to stop whining? We got 45 minutes
here. Reality is not whining. That's
right.
My answer.
On that note, let's bring in Klaus. Now, when we're trying to sum up a year or talk about a year, there's just so much to cover in a few minutes, and so many different.
A lot.
I mean, we should have called the show "Democratic Perspectives," plural, rather than "Democratic Perspective," because you know we have a lot of different perspectives.
I'd like to just interject in response to Mike in terms of the whining. What do you think Republicans and conservatives did for the last 8 years?
Nothing. They raised whining to an Olympic sport, world-class whining, complaining about Obama taking away their guns, taking away every human right they ever had, and they took away none of them and made their lives a lot better.
What disturbs me is what you just brought up, Mike, is the level of fantasy compared to the reality, that so much of our politics is based on fantasies about other people and other places and action that don't actually even occur. And it's just
Well, that's it. All the literature now is pouring out that you can't change anyone's mind if the truth, doesn't that be your truth, if the truth disagrees or somehow disturbs their worldview of how they see the world, whether they see a world as a traditional thing. And this is kind of what Paul was trying to talk about.
When we interviewed Michael Austin, he said something that we didn't follow up on because we were talking about the Constitution. He said, the human mind was not designed originally to seek truth. but to seek protection and advancement of interests.
That's very good.
And that's what he said. He said, truth is something that got developed later in the higher cortex, the interest in the truth. So if you look at Trump and Trump voters, a lot of times if you look at what will benefit me, that's what I believe. Is there actually going to be Sharia law in America? There's no chance of it. It's impossible. But it makes me feel good to have something to worry about. If you look at Trump's policies, they're almost entirely aimed at fear and anger. And Klaus can talk about, all right, Germany is the most powerful military power in World War I. I mean, they are really powerful, and they lose the war. Do they blame themselves for it, or do they look for somebody else to blame?
Of course not. Of course not. There's the what's called the dagger in the back legend, which is that, Germany was real. Well, the theme the Nazis developed, right, is that Germany didn't lose the war. It came from within, and, mostly the Jews are to blame. I was supposed to talk about the violent
But isn't it the same kind of thing in a way, Klaus, blaming immigrants, blaming black folks, blaming people who live in the cities, blaming foreign countries for all our problems?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact. So in preparation of this, I've written down this 5-minute monologue on violence and prejudice. And
go ahead.
All right.
We'll give you 3.5 minutes, though.
3.5 minutes?
No, you can have 5 minutes, Klaus.
All right. As I was writing it down, I thought it would be a chronology of what happened, but it ends up being much more of a personal and democratic perspective. So before Donald Trump's campaign exploded onto the landscape, racial prejudice seemed to be in retreat, right? Most politicians opposed it whenever they saw it and were confronted with it. The KKK was discredited. Neo-Nazis existed solely on the fringe and were considered crazy, didn't get any media attention. And then suddenly that changed 180 degrees. Trump's incendiary remarks about race, gender, physical disability shattered what turned out to be a thin veneer of civility that's nowhere near as deep as we all have thought. So the turn suddenly, clock's been turned back by decades. Jim Crow is back, as we talked about, alive and respectable. Racist viewpoints that may have been whispered just recently only in closed groups, suddenly a headline news. And voter suppression, as we discussed again, is in full swing, and the Voting Rights Act effectively shredded. So We ask ourselves, how can this happen? How could one man so easily conjure up the ghosts and monsters that we thought had disappeared? And having grown up in post-war Germany, when I grew up, the Nazi period was just a handful of years away, and I can't help but be struck by an eerie sense of déjà vu. Now, nobody's suggesting that Donald Trump is Hitler, and that a nation with a 200-year history of...
Yeah, people are suggesting. You're not suggesting it.
Nobody.
That's fine. That's good. Good for you, Klaus.
Nobody who's thinking about this soberly thinks that Donald Trump is or will ever become Hitler. And America, as we know, is a country with an amazing 200-year history of constitutional government, two political parties, which is not comparable to the Weimar Republic, right, which was fragile, a 20 political party and a new government every 6 months. But for somebody like me, there's some stark similarities. Like Hitler, Trump was and is addressing a population that, as we know, is not highly educated and suffers from tremendous economic anxiety, and while at the same time reading stories about new billionaires and on both coasts. And so the old promise of the American dream has suddenly vanished, and instead of looking forward to an ever more prosperous future, many people are hanging by an economic thread and are watching plants being shuttered in which their parents had earned a good living. So it's no surprise that they're angry and frightened, feel cheated, and have this vague sense of an unknown force dominating their lives. And then suddenly the demagogue bursts upon the scene with a message that offers them emotional relief. There are specific groups that are robbing them of their future. It's not their fault. It's the illegal aliens that are stealing their jobs. The minorities who are receiving a free handouts from the fruits of their labor. Muslims trying to blow up the country. Foreign nations shamelessly exploiting them. And below that, and it keeps coming back, is the whisper that the Jews are some of the major culprits. So this population suddenly turning its anger outward. It's not their fault. It's these other guys who they've disliked silently for a long time. Those are their true enemies. And suddenly it's okay, even chic, to hate them, and it's also okay to attack them. Because this very prominent, larger-than-life figure says that that's okay now. A man whose legitimacy is continuously reaffirmed by his constant appearance all day on every major TV station. He says it's okay, you can hate them, and it's even okay to attack them. So this is a guy who took several years to disavow the KKK, winking to his supporters. His right-wing followers, who were once relegated to backwaters with no media coverage, are suddenly celebrating in Washington, D.C., complete with a Nazi salute. And every major news outlet is covering them for days. What an incredible 180-degree turn in our sense of what's right or wrong. And it introduces an underlying menace to the whole political dialogue and political life in America. And you see racism exploding all over the country. Too many incidents to count even. Attacks on Muslims, immigrants, other minorities, including Jews. Just a few days, a synagogue in Arizona was heavily vandalized. Now, we were, you know, searching for good news. There is some good news. And that one piece of good news is that most of these racial incidents of intimidation are met with strong resistance by a large variety of people, like the ones who are listening to us today. So there was specifically the damage to the temple in Sun City. You can make an online donation to Temple Beth Shalom in Sun City and help pay for the restoration and also send an implicit message of support. And if you look at that website, there are lots and lots and lots of donations, $5 and $10. So that part I find really reassuring. So to conclude my thoughts, we ask ourselves, what is our role as Democrats and with a small d in this suddenly frightening new world? And I'm thrown back to what I was told in school when I grew up. We were taught emphatically in the aftermath of the Nazi period that everybody bears a personal responsibility for what goes on in the country. Saying I wasn't part of it was not a sufficient answer. If it's warranted, more direct level of involvement is required. So whenever we encounter racism, we need to confront it, remaining silent even when someone just in a conversation makes racist remarks is not an option. We got to say right then and there, I don't agree with that. Don't let it. You must not let it go. That's how I was raised. Part of my personal story is that my parents risked their lives to hide and feed a Jewish woman in Berlin who survived the Holocaust. And I've always wondered whether I could have mustered that degree of courage, and I always was relieved in the conviction that I'd never have to face the test. But suddenly, I'm put much closer to it than I ever thought possible in America. It won't come to that, but we need to remember that we all bear personal moral responsibility, it seems to me, for what goes on around us, and we need to push back against it, and if necessary, obstruct government actions that run contrary to our conscience. If Trump's government establishes a registry for Muslims, I'm going to register as one, as will many of my friends, although none of us are Muslims. It reminds me of the story of King Christian of Denmark, who announced when the Nazis occupied Denmark that he would wear a Star of David if the Jewish Danes were forced to wear one. So as we contemplate what life might be like under Trump, I think it's a good idea to remember that 175 years ago, Quakers who were hiding slaves were outlaws. Today we celebrate them as heroes. Those are my thoughts.
What I find particularly disturbing, going to one of the issues that you're talking about with the KKK and the neo-Nazi, you know, party or you know, hate mongers, is that the media has already succumbed to sanitizing the temptation.
Wall Street Journal said this morning they will not print. They will not call Trump's lies lies.
Well, they don't have to call them lies if they just call them falsehoods. There's other ways.
They will not call them anything. Okay. They will just report what it says.
But what's disturbing is that the
second largest paper in the country.
All these racist groups now are being sanitized by calling them alt-right.
You know, see, what the alt-right is, for folks who don't know, is there's the right-wing establishment. There's thousands of different people with different points of view. There's Tea Party folks. There's libertarians. There's conventional Republicans. There's just political conservatives of all things. The alt-right, the idea of the alt-right, was an idea to include white, not white supremacy, but white nationalism as part of the core appeal of the right wing. That's what it's been about. That's what one of Trump's advisors has been about. It's
Steve
Bannon. They would never say they were, yeah, they would never say they were white supremacists. They're simply white nationalists. And they think that's where the money is, in a sense, where the payoff is. And they've now moved very close to power.
It normalizes the racist organizations in a way that they haven't been normalized since the 1950s.
It's been there a lot. I mean, I'm frustrated by articles by some academics and stuff who have never worked with and don't know the kind of people they're talking about.
Well, they're marginalized. And
who say that there's no racist there. But you have to talk to folks for a while. It's not, and I've tried to, and I get in trouble with liberals, is it's not the kind of racism that was in the South where it was a theory and an ideology and stuff. It's something else. It's just them or us stuff. It's tribal stuff.
Call it whatever
I'm the white
want,
tribe,
it's still
they're
racism.
The black tribe, I'm the Christian tribe, they're the Muslim tribe. It's tribal stuff.
Call it whatever you want, it's still racism.
If I have to do something positive, if you're going to force me to do something positive, I'm going to say the definition of a republic means that the people run the government. That's what a republic means.
That means the people elect the government.
The people elect the government, but the ultimate power, the supreme power, rests with people. Then they send representatives to run things for them. Josh Marshall, in a blog called the Maha Blog, said something about the Republicans are like a dog chasing a car. They have no real governmental philosophy. We talk about LBJ, FDR, even Barack Obama had a philosophy of government. It wanted to do things to help the world and people and keep things stable and keep things going along and living the good lives we live in America. Republicans don't have that. They're like a dog chasing a car in that once the dog catches the car, he has no idea what to do with it. I mean, what's he going to do with a car? The only philosophy is cutting taxes. And that isn't a political strategy.
That's what I see when I look at Republican philosophy is behind everything else is support for the very wealthy. You know, they'll pretend to be interested in the deficit, and then they'll suddenly lose complete interest in the whole deficit politics stuff. As long as the deficit can be used to cut Social Security, empower the very wealthy, we're going to go through a period where, according to some of the articles I've been reading, you know, the Republican Party in Congress is very different in ways that Trump is. Trump is so erratic that we often don't know what he thinks about anything. And he says one thing and does another. But the Republican Party in Congress has a plan to undo almost everything that President Obama did.
And FDR.
Well, my response to my own question about whining, Gary, was that the Democratic whining is such that all we're trying to do is preserve the Republic. It's watching it fade via this from the inside, as every leader has told us it would, that the Republicans are hell-bent on destroying what we've built for the last time.
They started breaking all the rules in Congress that kind of held Congress together with all these arcane rules, but all the unwritten rules. And then Trump just bashed through all the restraints. So I think if you look at it from a positive thing, and Mike's talking about what can positive come out of this, is that we had a thin layer of respectability preventing racism. And now we're having someone really, really break through that veneer. Maybe we have to learn real non-racism, real understanding and of other people. Paul?
You know, on a positive note, I seem to be the only one having a positive note today. Actually, I feel pretty good because look at the demographics. The demographics show that this country is going to be non-white majority in a few years, and the state of Arizona even quicker.
That's right.
And why are we sitting around beating our heads when that is the truth? That
because
is going
cheating.
To happen.
They're cheating to allow
okay.
those whites to...
Well, then what are we doing as Democrats? And I'm using a Cap D Democrat. I'm going down to the state party meeting in a couple of weeks, yeah. and we're going to start talking about formulating policy. What are we going to do?
You tell us, man. You're going to the meeting.
Okay. Why don't you go to the meeting, too? Why don't we all go to the meeting in a spiritual way, okay? Because we have to start doing what we have to do.
I think voter rights and voter registration is something that Democrats have been trying to do for a long
time.
Should
we invite them? That's what they've been so successful with voter suppression. That's how white people, Rachel Maddow says, that there's so few white people left. That the only way they can win is by cheating.
Exactly.
So when are we leaving and where are we leaving from? Should we invite the listeners?
The big issue, if I could interject, is
no,
to,
Gary,
to,
no
to Paul's point is that yes, the demographics are changing, but what are the two parties doing about it? You know, we know what the Republicans are doing. They're pandering to the white and to males, but what are the Democrats doing? I fear that they've been taking that whole issue for granted and aren't addressing the problems of those people of people of color, and that's something, you know, they just say, well, okay, it's changing, we're going to benefit from this. You're not going to benefit from it if you don't do things to bring those people into the fold. And to address their issues.
Well, we're in a room of only white males. Right? I mean, we're all white males of a certain age, and I think that's just fine. We've got about 10 minutes
yeah,
left.
Well,
so let's start with Mike and everybody a couple. What do you look forward to happening in the year? What do you think Democrats, progressives, liberals, whatever you want to call them, ordinary people should do?
Two things I'm going to say.
Yeah, 3 seconds.
Part of my opening comments was that what the Republicans are doing is good business. At least a lot of people just consider it good. So all the Democratic whining is just that. It's whining. What the Republicans are doing is good business. They're tough. They're strong. They're getting it done. Stop whining and get tough, get strong, and you get it done. So that's the... my question is what the Republicans are doing good business? I think it's really
but
bad.
But isn't there a danger
business.
If you pick up the same tactics of your enemies or your opponents or people who you disagree
with? So
you want to
keep showing up to the knife fight with a club?
Well, that's my question to you.
No.
You know, then everybody suddenly has a club, and then everybody suddenly has a gun, and then everybody suddenly has a bomb. I mean...
that's great.
I'm just asking the
philosophy 201's down the road. We're talking about a political struggle here where you show up to the fight, at least be able to compete, at the same level. And we're not, Democrats aren't competing.
Gary, do you have...
You have to stand up for your convictions, and you have to fight hard for them. My looking into a crystal ball is that it benefits the wealthy to have a good recession from time to time. And
it benefits both ways.
And I think that...
Any wealth matters.
I don't see how that is.
And I think that it's going to happen in the next year.
My stockbroker tells me that.
And then I'd say the other thing that needs to be addressed and nobody is talking about. There's a study out of, well, Bill Timmerman and I've had a couple of shows about the coming problem of AI or artificial intelligence and robotics and other.
And that's what's actually taking the jobs. It's not even globalization. I mean,
right.
A lot of the economists think that almost none of the things being blamed for the problems with of globalization, the backlash of globalization, none of it's very important except for automation, artificial intelligence.
In fact, what Trump is talking about with the protectionism, putting tariffs on imported goods actually hurts the very people that voted for him, because it's only going to drive up the price of the products that they buy. And I want to point out that there was a study out recently from Oxford University that says that over the next 25 years, 47% of jobs in the world will disappear. 47% over the next 25 years. And that's to technology. So if politicians are only addressing immigration and angst and hatred and protectionism, you know, what are we going to do to address this, you know, the two major problems that we're facing that could change everything, and that is technology and climate change?
Klaus?
What should we do on a personal basis? As I said, oppose racism whenever you run into it. And as Democrats, capital D, oppose all the shredding of the safety net that the Republicans are proposing, and make sure that as it happens, people are aware that they're doing it because it's going to hurt them when suddenly they can't get medical insurance anymore. And then we need to register voters left and right to try to make up for the gerrymandering and the voter suppression.
You have to do more than register them. You have to communicate with them and convince them to support your policies and your party.
Paul?
Our
resident optimist.
Yeah, I
we're hurting.
I recently compiled an email list for the Arizona State Legislature, because we're getting ready to bombard people with emails. And I was struck by the fact that many, many, many of the Democratic names were Hispanic. I'd say more than half. I think you're missing something. I think there's a change taking place that is taking place quietly, and the people who are doing it are the ones who are going to make these changes. You don't have to do it for them. There are people who have had it, and they're waking up, and I see that the future is very bright. I don't want to be pessimistic.
Well, I was going to talk about Trump's foreign policy, and don't have much time to say much, but what I noticed in looking at conservative writers, conservative think tanks, is that almost none of them had heard of any of the people that Trump is using as advisors. And his advisors on foreign policy tend to be fringe extremists, or when the conservatives and liberals looked at the grouping, they couldn't make any sense of it. There just seemed to be people that he knew. If you wanted to say bad thing about Muslims and you had to believe really extreme things about Muslims, that would get you in. If you liked the Russians, that would get you in. It's a hodgepodge. So I think, like, we don't know what he's going to do in domestic policy. We really don't have a clue what he's going to do in foreign policy, except there are themes to his thinking that have been going on for a long time. Gary?
I want to put in a plug for our sponsors, Democrats of the Red Rocks. There is a Women's March, Sedona, Arizona Peaceful Unity March in support of the Women's March on Washington, Saturday the 21st, 1 to 3 p.m., meet up at 45 Birch Boulevard in West Sedona. And then the annual membership meeting is coming up the next day, Sunday the 22nd at 5 p.m. at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church.
Good place to start doing something. Join the Democratic Party and go to the Women's March in Washington. It's a good plan. We got this show and all our shows on vvid.org. We have our podcasts on vvid.org. All our great old Democratic Perspective shows. Don't forget, you can find this show on TuneIn and other. You can find this show on other online internet, somewhat liberal spaces. So please look for us there. If you threw out your radio, please find us on the internet. Listen to us live. Listen to the podcasts on vvid.org. We're on your side, baby.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.